Hey everyone, I'm Mark Talbot from 20 Foot Radius.
And I'm Derek Myers from DungeonsMaster.com.
I'm Craig Sutherland, and you're listening to Recounting Encounters, a D&D Adventures League podcast.
A show where we talk about D&D encounters, D&D expeditions, D&D epics,
and exploits from our D&D home games.
Hey everyone, welcome to another episode of Recounting Encounters. Derek and Craig and I are going to be talking this week on multiple things. So let's get started. Craig, let's lead into it.
Yes, indeed, sir. Let's do just that.
Let's lead into it, yes.
Indeed. What are we starting with? I can't remember.
start with the video game. You guys are video game guys. Sword Coast Legends.
All right.
Sword Coast Legends.
Yeah, Sword Coast Legends, that's like the new D&D game. So this is not associated with Neverwinter. This is its own fun thing. And if anyone has ever, and this is going to get confusing now, because next thing I'm going to say is, if anyone ever played Neverwinter Nights, not the Neverwinter MMO, but a very old computer RPG game called Neverwinter Nights that came out a long time ago, it's very similar to that. At least in spirit, it's similar to that, where the game is basically, it has a full campaign, but the focus is really this big multiplayer suite where you can, a team of up to four players can adventure together, while a fifth player can act as the DM and be behind the scenes. And so instead of having, you know, pre-scripted monsters and whatever just show up, the DM can be dropping in monsters here and there, or upping the challenge if the characters are having an easy go of it, or if you're looking for a more of a narrative kind of focus, you can, you know, help them reduce difficulty if they're struggling. But that's the whole idea. They're kind of trying to interpret tabletop D&D as a video through the medium of video games. So yeah, it's coming out to PC as of this Tuesday, October the 20th. Is that what that is? Yes, it is. October the 20th. Yes, I was.
Are you asking me or telling me?
I'm telling you now.
Okay.
October the 20th. So that's coming out then. They've been doing some sneak previews, and I've got a chance to play a fair bit of it. And I have my thoughts and some things that I'd like to see them implement in the future. But my overall impression is it's good. Definitely a great starting point. I think they definitely have a base to add some additional content there and customizability. But I like what I see so far.
Did you play with? Did you end up playing with pugs?
No, well, I actually played a local group. I had a Lindsay here was on her computer, so she also has it. So she had loaded it up, and we just played together. And
oh, okay.
You know what? Actually, I accidentally left my channel to open, so it was open to pick up. So I did have people dropping in, just random people. So, but I mean, I had no issues with connections or anything like that. Like technically, it was very stable. So.
That's through Steam, right? So it's the Steam servers that are being used?
It's not exclusively through Steam, but yeah, the version I'm playing is through Steam. I'm not sure what other services provide it, so, but you're mostly, it's Steam is where you're going to likely find it.
Now, what's it available on? Just PC?
For now, it's PC, but I think November, it's coming to the PlayStation 4 and the Xbox One as well.
Okay. So Neverwinter is doing something similar. They're launching the new Strongholds on Xbox. I think it's this weekend or this week, actually today. And Xbox players are actually looking forward to it. So if you get a chance, go online, but go to 20 Foot Radius. And if you're interested in learning a little more about Neverwinter, we interview some of the devs. So that was quite the interesting talk. And then, you know, they talk about Neverwinter a little bit, and then we talk a little more about their influences in life. So, yeah, so I'm just plugging the site, go on, take a look, listen.
Yeah, and that Xbox version, I have to say that it has really maintained quite the following.
It has, and PC has gone down a little bit, but I think it's picking up again because Strongholds has been a great success.
Yeah, well, I mean, that happens with every MMO. You always have your sort of peaks and valleys when new content is released and it maintains for a little bit, then it'll dip and go up and down. But Neverwinter has proven itself to have legs, that's for sure.
Yeah, and it's kind of funny because I was looking at the chat this weekend or last weekend, and somebody was saying, oh, yeah, well, in the new update and stuff like that, they're going to prevent people from joining guilds anymore and all that. I'm like, really? Why would Neverwinter, you know, cut their own... slit their own throats, right? It's ridiculous.
Yeah.
Strongholds is like their biggest thing right now, the thing that's keeping them.
Yeah, that wouldn't make sense at all.
No, not at all. So, so I don't hold any kind of water to that rumor, but hey, you never know.
Fair enough.
All right. Let's talk about D&D.
We are talking about D&D, just virtual style.
Yeah, I don't play the virtual stuff. All right, let's move on to something I'm a little more interested in. Coming soon, very soon, we've got the Sword Coast Adventurer's Guide. This is the first accessory book, splat book, if you will, that mm-hmm. presents character options beyond just the player's handbook. I don't know, Craig, correct me if I'm wrong, have they announced any of the specific details? They did that preview, right?
Yeah, they did a couple of preview releases as part of the Extra Life charity event that they did. Yeah. And that, which is, by the way, still ongoing. I think it's through to December, I want to say, that they're taking donations. And they still have other content they're planning to release. Even though the book will have been out by the time that this finishes, there are things like there's a super high-res version of the Faerun map and whatnot that they're going to release if they get to certain milestones. So if you're interested, check it out. Certainly for a good cause.
It's in the Kickstarter?
No, Kickstarter.
It's right on the Wizards website.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
It's like an Extra Life charity thing for children's hospitals.
Got it.
I seem to remember one of the things they teased or that they talked about was a new build for the Rogue, which, as someone who's playing a Rogue, I found particularly appealing. But yeah, Sword Coast Adventurer's Guide, from what we understand, it's going to have player options. It's also going to have stuff about the Forgotten Realms world, specifically, obviously, to the Swords Coast area, where the ongoing encounters seasons have been taking place. And so you've got your player part and your DM part, which should make it appealing to just about everybody.
It looks like it's roughly about a 200-page book. Roughly, and half that is dedicated to the setting stuff, and half of it to the player option stuff. The reason we now know that is just because they did release the table of contents, which had the page numbering on it.
Oh, that's right. So for dates, the Alpha Stores, Advanced Stores, they'll get it on October 23rd. The real street date's November 3rd. So depending on how quickly we get this podcast up, the book will be out shortly. I know I'm going to be picking it up.
Oh, yeah.
I got to think a lot of people are. I know there's been still some debate, not so much debate, but there hasn't yet been a firm decision by the Adventurers League admins as to whether or not these options will be available and legal for AL play. I've got to think that down the road they will be, but until we get official word, it's not until we hear otherwise. So we'll see. But I've everything I've been sort of hearing and the buzz I've been hearing from some of the folks I've been chatting with, it sounds like that's the intent. It's just a matter of how do they announce that and how do they sort of monitor if there's anything in there that's a little bit broken. But whatever.
Yeah,
they'll let us know. Yep.
Yeah. That's so like in the meantime, don't stress it. You know, it's not that big a deal, right? So. But, yeah, like you said, we'll find out eventually one way or the other, so not to worry. But you know what, though? This book felt like it was always just such a long way off, and now it's just like, well, it's going to be out in about a week, roughly, at this point, you know, for the VIP stores. So, I don't know, just kind of feels like it snuck up on us.
Yeah, and I know from I was talking to a lot of people, not locally, but through the Facebook site and some of the forums and on Twitter that people were planning to play through Princes of the Apocalypse until November when the new book, the Swords Coast book, comes out, so that when they do finally jump into Out of the Abyss, they can take advantage of some of these new character builds for the new adventure right from the beginning. I mean, obviously, at our stores, we jumped right into the new adventure in September when it came out, but from what I've been hearing, that this has been a very popular choice among people as they want to see what this book's like and then use these options right from the beginning of the new adventure. So.
Fair enough.
Yeah.
Especially if you're playing in a home game, that's something to consider, right? Because you don't have to think about the Adventures League stuff, but...
Yeah, exactly. So, all right. Another quick thing then. A new new episode of Unearthed Arcana was released from Wizards. This one previews Prestige classes. And anyone who's played 3rd edition, 3.5, or even Pathfinder has probably got some familiarity with Prestige classes. The one that's in there is called, I've got it right here, hold on. It's called the Ruin Scribe.
Oh.
Yeah, it does remind me of the Rune Priest class that was released in Player's Handbook 3 for 4th edition.
Yeah,
that's what I'm sure. Yeah, I'm sure there was a 3rd edition inspiration for this as well. It definitely has that sort of Eastern feel to it. If you're playing an Oriental Adventures kind of game, this definitely feels like it could be applied into that with almost no effort whatsoever. Interesting to note, prerequisites. There are some pretty interesting prerequisites. Again, this is only one. I don't know if they're all going to be like this, but if this is the model, which you got to think it is if it's the one they're releasing first, it sort of sets the bar pretty high. So on this one, it's got prerequisites. Two ability stats have to be 13 or more. In this case, it happens to be dexterity and intelligence. You need certain proficiency and skills, in this case, arcana. You need to be at least a fifth level character. So it can be a combination. You could be a 2-3 something. You don't have to be 5 purely in one thing, so that's nice. But at least this way, DMs know players aren't going to have this option available to them for a number of levels. So if you're just still playing the level 1-4 adventures, you're not going to see any of these options from the prestige classes, assuming that this is sort of the benchmark. Most importantly, the most interesting prerequisite in this case was complete a special task. And then it gives you a short paragraph of what that special task is. And this, to me, is the creator's way of giving the DM some serious control over whether or not characters can take this prestige class without consulting the DM first. So in this case, it basically says you've got to find a master who agrees to take you on as an apprentice after you've found one of these secret runes. So, I mean, if you want to be a jerk DM, you can just be like, nope, you can't find an NPC who meets that requirement. And, you know, bang, now your characters can't take advantage of it. I'm certainly not encouraging that, but if you need to have some level of control, good, bad, or otherwise, this is built right into it. So we'll see if there are similar prerequisites in other prestige classes or if this one happens to be a little bit outside of the norm.
Indeed.
All right. Mark, anything else to add?
No.
No, just want to make sure you're still there.
I'm still
there. Right.
I actually have one other thing to add. Yep. It just might be just a little interest note. So you know how everyone always talks about Vin Diesel being D&D player and all that stuff, right? Like, that's always a big thing whenever his name comes up.
Yep.
It's kind of like, oh, look how cool he is, and he plays D&D. He has a new movie coming out, The Last Witch Hunter, and I guess there's a lot of information. He's doing a lot of the press and whatnot to hype the movie up, which comes out later in October. But apparently, from what I understand, from what he's been saying, is that story and that at least the character idea is what led to that movie. A D&D character of his is what led to that story being created and that movie being made. Him and the director, I guess, from what I understand, had played D&D together, and I guess he had told him about his character and all this stuff, and then they kind of got talking about what possible ways they could take that kind of character concept within a movie and blah, 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 blah. Now they have The Last Witch Hunter. No idea if the movie's any good, but just thought it might be like an interesting note to mention.
Yeah, I think I read somewhere, I can't remember the exact quote, but it was basically Vin Diesel said something to the effect of, yeah, this movie is basically what happens when you give a D&D nerd millions of dollars and tell him to go and make a movie.
Yeah. But in this specific case, because I know he also kind of thought of Riddick in the same way, but like, I know in this case, this character is, from what I understand, again, directly based off one of his, like, imagine if you take your home campaign D&D character and like, you know, I'm going to make a movie out of this character. That's kind of what happened in this case, from what I understand.
Yeah, no, should be good. Indeed. Cool. Okay. Before we move on to our recap of encounters, let's do our second of what we hope will become a regular installment on these podcasts called I Heard It at the Game Store. And we really need to work on like some special effects so my voice sounds all echoey and
important. I heard it at the Game Store.
I heard it at the Game Store.
Well, let's just get you on a bad Skype connection. That'll sound
yeah,
weird enough.
Yeah.
Get that Mr. Roboto sort of voice.
Yeah. I do have a little bit of a sore throat going, so maybe I get that. Oh, I heard it at the Game Store now. Yeah. All right. So we did a few of these last week. We got a couple more this week. So anyway, I'll just fire through them, and then we'll talk about them, whether or not what we've overheard at the Game Store was something that we really felt someone needed to step in and make a correction, or whether these things are absolutely 100% correct, true, accurate, and legal according to Adventurers League, despite what some people may think. So, the first one I've got on my list, two characters were sitting down to play, two players were sitting down to play in expeditions. They were talking about their guys. I have a this, I have a that. And the one guy said, hey, you know, I see you don't have a magic sword here. I have two magic weapons. Let me lend you one for this adventure. So, question to you guys. Are players allowed to lend out their items?
Honestly, I'm not sure, personally. I would personally not see why not, but yeah, it's I'm not sure.
Craig?
Yes. Yes, in fact, they are.
Yep, that is true. And when it happened, a few people sort of, their eyes, you know, you raised the one eyebrow, like, huh? Basically, yeah. Mark, they were like you. They're like, are we allowed to do that? And absolutely, yeah,
you kind of feel like you're cheating a little bit, eh?
A little, yeah. So basically the rule of thumb, or well, not the rule of thumb, the rule is players that are playing at the same table as part of the same adventure, as part of the same campaign, can lend each other items during the course of play. Permanent items, like even items that may or may not have certificates attached to them. Like we're talking real on, hard on, full on magic items. But you cannot keep them even though they've been lent to you once the adventure is over. So you can't say, hey, Craig and I are playing together this week. I lend Craig a magic sword. Next week we're at different tables. He can't still use the magic sword even though it's, quote, on loan. The loan has to be returned at the end of that session because otherwise it's like making a trade without the trade. And as we know in this edition, you can't sell items.
Indeed.
Now I do have a question for you.
Yes.
What if one night the item that was lent to the person, the other player does not show up? Does that guy lose the item?
I would say that if you're playing something like Encounters, where it's an ongoing campaign, the assumption would be when you pack up your stuff at the end of the night, the item is returned. Mm-hmm. So I wouldn't just assume that he's continuing to carry it through.
Yeah, that
I would make it out literally at the beginning and end of each session. You make a special
plan that saying, is how I'm that
lending
works.
Him this item, and at the end he goes, I.
Right.
Yeah.
Cool. Good call. That's the call I would have made too.
Yeah, right. No, I mean that is actually. Yeah, that is how the rule works. That it does get reverts back to the person at the end of the session.
Okay.
Indeed.
So next.
Cool. All right. This one I'm gonna thank Craig. Craig provided this one. This was something he had heard at the game store a few weeks back. I don't know if it was at his table or another table, and we won't go into details because we don't want to embarrass anybody. One of the players was sitting there ready to rock and roll, had his dice out, his player's handbook out, and when the DM said, hey, where's your character sheet? He says, I have my character sheet right here, and he points to his head. So the question is that allowed? Can you play a character from memory?
I would say no. I just say it's, you know.
I also say no.
Yeah.
In fact, I did say no.
Yeah.
Now, okay.
Yeah, I got to agree with that too.
Okay, so we all agree that we say no, so there's no further discussion than that. But what about, for example, remember I gave the example of myself? I got slotted in a high-level table when I was supposed to play a low-level table. Now, I knew my character well enough that I could play him from my head. Now, what would you say about that, Craig?
About playing your character from your head? I, you know what, honestly, I would still say no. It's not something you're supposed to do.
Not something you're supposed to do, but I mean...
Just because you have to think, the DM can always call to audit the sheet, right?
Right. Now... I understand that, but I mean, in my case, you guys slotted me with because that high level table needed an extra player. So, are there exceptions to the rule? I mean, for a one time thing?
No, I mean, like. See, okay, so now we're kind of getting into slippery territory because to say that, like, if the table needs an extra player, that's where you can say. Technically, no, you can't because. You don't have your proper character there, the one that you've been updating all this time, right? If you're forgetting a stat or something like that. But there is no actual official documentation, at least that I'm aware of, that says that like you couldn't just from memory put it down on a blank character sheet if you had one available to you.
Oh, okay. I mean, in that case, yeah, you can put it down on a blank character sheet. I could have done that too. So, yeah. Okay, I see your point. Very cool.
But the key to all of this, though, is your adventures log.
Yeah, I filled that out the next time I went to the store.
Adventures log.
Cool. All right, so next one, Derek.
Indeed.
Yeah, sorry guys, my connection's being a little wonky here, but can you guys hear me okay?
Yeah. No problem. Yep.
All right.
So we're ready for our third one. All
right. Yeah, this is our third and final one for tonight. This is a little bit of a back and forth exchange. So the DM said to the group, after a heavy combat, the DM said, you guys can rest overnight. You've completed the long rest. There's been no random encounters. You're good to go. We'll pick things up there. One of the players said, good. Now my guy's back to full hit points. And the DM said, no, he's not. You didn't expend any healings, any hit dice yet. So the question is, do you regain all your hit points when you take a long rest? Was the player right? Or do you need to use your hit dice to heal up? Was the DM right?
Well, myself personally, I honestly think it follows the mantra that we've always followed. You gain all your hit points back. Now, I don't know about hit dice itself. I always thought that you regain your full hit dice, but Craig, you can end that sentence.
Yes, sir. The answer to that is you do regain all of your lost hit points as per the Player's Handbook standard rule. What you gain back in half is the total amount of your hit dice, and that's your total hit dice, not just the ones you've spent. So you will regain a total of hit dice equal to half of your proper full amount of hit dice, but your lost hit points will fully regain, so you'll be back to full health.
Nice.
Indeed. So I know there's been some confusion on that, and especially if you, a lot of D&D players are going to be reading all the different resources. There's alternate sort of healing options in the DMG. There's some of the Unearthed Arcana stuff has had some variant rules, but those things are not, however, legal for the play in Adventures League. Yeah, that's right, and that is outlined in the Adventures League guide. And if you're playing a home game, usually your players will have sort of had that conversation ahead of time to say these are the rules options we're using, sort of that agreement ahead of time, so everyone knows what they're playing and have a sense of consistency.
Okay, very cool. All right, so we've talked about, we heard it at the game store, we've done our three. Excellent. So we'll come back with something more next week on that. I guess the final part of the podcast is we're going to be talking about what happened at our gaming tables. So I guess maybe, I don't know, Craig, do you want to start? What happened this week at Encounters?
Yeah, so I had a bit of a special situation this particular week. We were arriving at the game store. Everyone's excited to play, of course, but everyone at my table, myself included, were rather distracted this week, and that's because the Major League Baseball playoffs are currently ongoing, and the Toronto Blue Jays were in an elimination game. Game 5, someone's going home empty-handed. All of us were quite distracted, and considering that it was such an anticipated game in Toronto, the game store had the game on off the television, so that didn't help at all. So, however, we decided we're still going to play D&D. We're still going to play. We can have a view of the screen and watch whatever's going on. So we did end up playing, and basically my party is sort of on the run from their Drow imprisonment, and they're on their way to Slubladoop, which I think if that's the name is correct, that's the Kowatoa village. Their intention is that they want to take a boat across the Dark Lake and then get to Neverlight Grove, because that's where the NPC Stool has advised. That's where he's basically let them know that's where he wants to go. That's where he'll feel safe. Now, the rest of the characters are going along with that, but what we've been doing, so the encounter, basically the way it's set up, and I'm not sure how much detail, I can't recall how much detail we've gone to before, but it's, you have a whole bunch of these adventuring sites in locations within the Underdark, and then you have all these rules for travel in between. So, from point A to, if you're here, the distance to this location is this, to that is that, to that is that. So wherever the characters are, you always know roughly in terms of days of travel how long it's going to take.
Mm-hmm.
And, yeah, so basically I've been tracking that. I've been tracking their the whole time we were quite honestly doing random encounters through it. Now, it's not just simple random encounters, right? It's not just like, oh, you run into enemies. Okay, now you keep going. Now you run into more. They have this complex system of how to generate unique sort of random encounters. Sometimes there's terrain, sometimes there's monsters, sometimes it's a combination thereof, but you can come up with some pretty interesting stuff in there. And I know for Derek's table, he had been sort of customizing some of his own ideas, but I'll let him get into that when he's able. But for my own table, you know, we did have a couple of random encounters, and they also have a couple of bigger sort of set piece encounters that aren't situations that the characters can get involved with. So I basically did a few random encounters. We were tracking their travel through the Underdark, and as part of it, because they're prisoners on the run, they're trying to maintain their food levels and their water levels so they can survive in the Underdark. So we're meticulously tracking that. I usually don't track that quite so meticulously, but because it's kind of part of the flavor and part of the atmosphere of trying to survive in the Underdark, I thought that it was apt to do that. And the players have really caught on with it. They really liked it. Yeah, so that's basically my whole night was that. We did a number of these random encounters, had some really cool situations, and they got involved in one of the bigger sort of set-piece situations that I was mentioning. I don't want to give too many details because other groups out there are going to be doing all sorts of different things. The whole idea is that you have all these encounters that can happen in the Underdark, and there's not really necessarily a set spot where they have to happen. So for as the DM, it makes it a lot more free form to place things where you need them, or you know, if your character's going from one location to another, they have a chance to, you know, potentially, like if as a DM, if you think you want them to have something happen or experience something, you have that potential to use the Underdark travel to, you know, to give them what they need, basically.
Right. Now, I know that that Slubidu or whatever, the Kuotoa city, you said you're on your way there, yeah. Right? Have you gotten there yet?
No. Basically, my intention was I wanted to get there by the end of last night.
But because of the distraction.
Like I said, yeah, because of the baseball game, we were all very distracted by that. But we got pretty close to it, and I set them up with the situational sort of thing going on. But I anticipate by next week we should be able to get right into it.
Okay. Very cool.
Now, some of the distances traveled, I want to note too, between like Slubladoop, let's say, and you know, whatever, like Menzo Baranzin or whatever, might be like the book might say like this is going to be at least 36 days, right? And it the way they generate how to do encounters, that's a lot of work to say, okay, well, geez, now we have to like track every single day, every night, da, da, da. But they actually have a system in there for fast travel as well for certain situations. So they really did, like when I read over that, because chapter 2 of the book is really just how to deal with travel between certain locations in the Underdark and hazards of the Underdark, and they were pretty thorough in outlining for a DM how to handle that, and I've had a lot of fun with it so far.
Very cool. How about you, Derek? What happened at your store?
Well, I'm not as big a baseball fan as Craig, so I was not nearly as distracted as he was with the game. And my table just played through. We did end up on the edge of Slubidoop by the end of the night. As the characters get close, there is a predefined encounter that happened. And essentially that encounter, we did the first round of it. And that's where I stopped it. It was sort of a good dun-dun-dun, something happens. They all sort of got a sense of where it's going to go next. And we called it there. So I spent most of last night's session doing some additional traveling. I wanted to do at least one water encounter before the party got to Slidoopadoop, assuming I'm saying that right. And so the encounter I ran was actually completely made up by me. I didn't have any desire to do any of the ones from the book at this point. I had them encounter a treasure hunter who was trying to retrieve treasure from the bottom of the lake. And so one of the things that the party learned from this treasure hunter was he's looking for a legendary sword, which I believe was called Dawnbringer. Craig, do you happen to have the book in front of you? Is that what it's called?
Yeah, it's called Dawnbringer.
Dawnbringer.
And this is an item that is mentioned in the text of the book. And this treasure hunter had a whole bunch of background. He had some lore. He had some research. And I wanted to give the party a hint of that this is an item. This is a real thing. And so they assisted him with his treasure hunt. They had a little bit of an unfortunate combat encounter. They came up empty-handed at the end of their little treasure hunt. They did find a sword, but they quickly realized it wasn't the Dawnbringer weapon they thought it might be. However, the treasure hunter, although he didn't really present any signs at the beginning, once the sword had been found from the bottom of the lake, his madness became quickly apparent that he had completely was obsessed with this item and was willing to do a lot of crazy things to ensure that his quote-unquote quest for the sword continued in the right direction, which created a little bit of a tense situation among the party. But this tenseness and this in-party fighting and arguing actually is what led to the encounter that we ended the session with, because the party completely through stealth and any attempts to be quiet completely out the window as they argued over the right and the wrong of this item and the right and the wrong of this NPC and a few other things that came up. This attracted the creatures that basically beset upon them at the end of the session. So next week we're going to be right, like we are now back completely on the script, on the book, chapter 3. And next week we'll pick it up right from there. They'll get to Sladoobadoop one way or the other. And I figure they'll probably have 2, maybe even 3 nights there, depending on how much they want to do. And we'll proceed from there. Now, the PDF that's provided for free to DMs only brings you as far as Sladoobadoop, and that's it. I mean, you have that chapter 2 with all the travel, which also has a few interesting mini encounters in there. So if you're just using the PDF, you've got some of those to fall back on. But if your intent is to continue long-term with this campaign, after they leave Sladoobadoop, you basically need the actual hardcover book. Partly because, you know, you need to know what's coming next. And obviously, once you get there, you need to know what's happening. You need the maps, you need the monsters and all that jazz. So, yeah, it's progressing well. My party's been really small. We've only had 4 players for most of our time. Just real life is getting in the way, and we seem to be down 1 guy every week, and it always seems to be someone different. So everybody's getting a sense of the story, but we're having a real hard time with that party unity thing. So hopefully next week we'll be back to a full attendance and keep on trucking through.
Nice. And just to be clear to everyone out there too, if anyone who hasn't run it yet is wondering, although Derek and my party are both heading towards Sloobladoob, it is also entirely possible for the players to want to go elsewhere. That is sort of the natural progression out there, but the NPCs that you go with all have different sort of motivations of where they want to go, and depending on who the party ends up traveling with, that can have an impact as to where they decide to go. But yeah, I mean, I think the way I know Sloobladoop is one of the closest locations for them to arrive at, and like I said, it is in the PDF. It is the one that's given out as the next spot to go. So I imagine a lot of DMs will be going that way, but it isn't, again, like I said, it's entirely possible for players to, for example, throw caution and say, "Let's go to Menzo Baranzen." Not such a great idea, mind you.
Bring back characters.
It's a possibility, I guess.
Yeah, bring back new characters. You get start from the start again.
Indeed.
Nice. All right. Anything else to talk about, gentlemen?
I think that's good.
I'm good.
Excellent. All right. Well, thank you for being with us again, or all of us getting together. And join us next week as we speak about what happened around the table and a couple of other things. So until next week, have a blast.
Indeed.
You can follow me on Twitter at Amaron_DM, and be sure to visit dungeonsmaster.com for original D&D 4th edition material, including a weekly field report of my D&D encounters experiences.
And follow me on Twitter at 20foot, and visit 20footradius.blogspot.com for your weekly dose of D&D encounters. That's 20footradius20ftradius.blogspot.com. Until then, have a blast.